Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. Back at Studio A this morning with my guest, the one and only, I think is the only you can introduce my guest this morning. George Sharp is here with me this morning from Marion Oil and Gas, investment manager. Good morning, Mr. Sharp.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you back.
Well, it's always good to be on your program. I think T. Greg and I played some bad music the last time I was here.
You've done that. You've helped us understand trends in the oil and gas industry and a lot of other things that is way above my pay grade. So I'm always glad to reach out to you and that you graciously accept my invitation. So,
all right. Well, thanks for having me.
You bet. Thanks for coming in. You made a presentation at the San Juan Basin Oil and Gas Conference that I happened to see, and that's why I wanted to get you in here to talk a little bit about it, which is this path to net zero. And you say in your presentation that the math does not add up, and I wanted you to kind of get into a little more in-depth about that today.
I appreciate the opportunity. So,
yeah.
First off, I'm a believer that man is impacting the climate and feel that we do need to do something about it. And unfortunately, what we're doing about it is what doesn't add up.
Gotcha.
And I think we're going down the wrong path, and as we'll go through this morning, I'll show you where that comes from. Again, I am not a climate scientist. I'm just an engineer with a calculator, and I'm not afraid to use it. I'm not sure very many people in the federal government have a calculator.
Maybe not. Probably a slide rule at this point.
Right. Well, you
never know.
I don't think they're math people.
I got you.
I think math makes a lot of people squirm, and no one seems to be doing the math on the full-scale build-out of wind, solar, and batteries, which is the direction the advocates, green advocates, are pushing.
And that's kind of your point, is that when you do put pencil to paper, it really doesn't add up, which is what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, when you look at really trying to run the world forever for the life of man on wind, solar, and batteries, again, the impact is way, way more than oil and gas or nuclear. The other two options.
Well, let's look right into it. And as I said, you work for Marion Oil and Gas, but you are really representing yourself this morning.
That is true. Marion Oil and Gas supports my education efforts in the community. In fact, I couldn't do it without them. But this is not them talking. This is George Sharp.
So. Okay, and a George Sharp production is what we're going to say.
There you go.
Okay, very good. So here we are with some of your PowerPoint and presentations,
All right.
And just that.
The bottom line is we're heading down the wrong path.
Okay.
So let's talk a little bit first about energy and what it is. Energy is the capacity to perform work. There's potential energy. That's energy that's about to happen. And then there is kinetic energy. That's energy that's happening right now.
Right.
Another concept on energy is conservation of energy. Energy is neither created nor destroyed. We're talking about. That's all right. I went the wrong way.
No. I'll catch up to you. I'll go back.
Is it back one? I think that must be the next one.
It is the next one.
Okay.
I'm going back to this one.
Oh, no. Let's go on to the next one.
Where do you want to go?
To the next one.
Okay. This one.
So that one.
Okay.
All right. So the source of all energy is the sun.
Right.
A lot of people don't think about wind and hydro coming from the sun, but really the sun drives the water cycle. The wind, the sun creates the temperature differentials that creates wind, and fossil fuels are really biofuels in very compact, very efficient form. People think as biofuels is green. In reality, biofuels are just inefficient, very, very inefficient, very, very emission. Take a whole lot of wood to make a gallon of gas.
Right.
And that's one of the issues is that there's a lot of the world that's all they're living on is biofuels, cooking on cow dung and wood. And again, it's not a very healthy use of fuels and not very efficient.
Right. And as we talk about this, trying to replace our current energy supplies, right, on a one-to-one basis without using fossil fuels, right, in oil and gas or what yes. have you, this is where the math gets into the really big, big numbers and what you claim and say is unsustainable or even undoable, unaffordable.
Right. And the next little thing, if you push it, will show that the energy density, so you get a whole bunch of energy out of a little bit of fuel in oil and gas, and nuclear is the most energy dense. I don't know that we talk about it here, but I have it on the video.
Yeah.
That an aircraft carrier with 5,000 sailors can go 25 years without refilling. 25 years.
On a nuclear.
If it was electric ship, you couldn't get across the ocean. You wouldn't have room for the sailors.
Get out of the harbor. Maybe.
So the bottom line is when we go to these very diffuse sources of energy, it takes lots and lots of land. It takes lots and lots of resources. And again, when you look at a full-scale build-out and trying to run the world that way, it just doesn't add up.
Gotcha. And that's what we're going to look at
today.
And I think it was your friend and colleague T. Greg Marion who said every energy source has a – what was I trying? I just lost the word.
Has impact.
Impact. That's the word.
Yes, it has exactly. impact. There is
anyone you could think of.
There is no zero impact.
Right. Exactly.
And, yeah.
So let's move on.
So conservation of energy
Right.
Energy is neither created nor destroyed, and so the energy that was absorbed from the sun 100 million years ago by those plants and sea animals living in the shallow seas was buried and turned into chemical energy and oil and gas that turned into chemical energy and gasoline that turned into heat and pressure energy in a combustion chamber and turns into the kinetic energy of your car driving. So we are driving our cars and heating our homes on ancient sunlight from 100 million years ago.
Okay, I follow that.
And
but it's a finite resource, right?
No, it is finite. First off, it took 100 million years to make. So it's finite in the sense that they're still stunned, that plants are still absorbing, and they're still rotting and turning into fuel over 100 million years. But in our lifetime,
we're not replacing it as fast as we're using it.
We aren't replacing it as fast as we're using it.
Got it. Okay. Gotcha.
So the mass is neither created nor destroyed either. So the CO2 that's emitted from our car is actually the same CO2 that was pulled out of the air 100 million years ago. And my point there is that the planet has been here before. The planet has been at very, very high CO2 levels. And climate change, which is occurring, naturally occurring, has for millions of years. 100 million years ago, we had an ocean across the San Juan Basin.
Right.
High sea levels, high CO2 levels, high temperatures, dinosaurs running around.
Right. Not caused by cars, but by other sources.
Not caused by cars, but just by the world and nature. But the planet has survived 5 billion years of all kinds of crap, and it's going to survive this. This is not about saving the planet. In fact, nature has a way of keeping things in equilibrium. When you get too many rabbits in an area, plague shows up, or you run out of food, or the wolves show up, and to keep the rabbit population in check. But energy has allowed mankind to get out of balance with nature. It's helped us fight nature. And so when it's 115 degrees in Phoenix, not in my house. In my house, it's 71 degrees. Not 70, not 72. I like it at 71. We can dial in. When it's minus 25 in Anchorage, Alaska, not in my house. 71 degrees.
Got it.
So energy helps us tame the climate, make our lives easier, allow us to live longer, allow us to live better lives.
Sure.
And
but a lot of folks may say, well, sure, the planet may survive some of this current climate change that we are seeing, but will the human race survive as oceans maybe get higher and things like that?
I think the human race is going to be like cockroaches. There's no way you can kill us. We're too smart. We're gonna figure it out.
Okay.
And in fact, if this was about, if mankind was really caring about the planet, Then when nature sends a little plague in, like COVID-19, to try to thin the herd and right the ship a little bit, you know, get that 8 billion people down, you know, a billion or two, we do everything we can to play defense against nature. And so the reality is we're not trying to save the planet. We're trying to save mankind. And right. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But it's, let's be truthful about what the real situation is.
Okay. All right. And I guess part of that, too, is the price tag of some of these things. And, you know, do we save ourselves and our planet but go bankrupt in the process? Or do we figure out a better way, well, I guess, to move forward, which is part of your comments, too, I think, right?
Well, and the price tag is a great point to bring up. Everybody, and there's a slide later on in the slideshow about the economy, but everybody's concerned about climate change, but none of the people that are concerned about climate change are willing to give up personally to hurt their economy, to hurt their personal economics, to save climate change. You know, there's if you want, you can pay extra for green electrons in the Farmington utility, and I think there are half a dozen people out of the, you know, 50,000 people in the community that choose to pay that extra dime and, you know, that extra electricity bill.
Right.
And the reality is the cost, energy is in everything. It is so valuable. We cannot do without it. And so when the price of energy goes up, the price of everything goes up, which is what happened,
We've seen it.
Yeah, coming out of COVID.
Right. We have seen it. And so as you put it in perspective then.
Correct.
Where are we headed?
And that's the other thing. It's not just in perspective, but in perspective in terms of problems in the world. There are, you know, climate change and natural disasters are an issue. If we can go to that next slide.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that we are getting better at dealing with climate disasters. And in fact, energy helps us deal with climate disasters.
Right.
This is the deaths by climate disaster or by natural disasters. Some of these are earthquakes. That's not really a climate disaster. Deaths by natural disasters by decade since the 1900s. And you've seen dramatic reduction in the number of people killed. And really, it's energy that helps us prepare, helps us build seawalls, build stronger buildings that can withstand earthquakes and withstand, you know, high winds. Energy is what is the anecdote. You know, it's both the cause and the cure for climate change.
Right. And I just want to point out for folks who maybe can't see that graph all that clearly, the top three, two of the top three bars on this graph from basically the 1920s and the 1940s, the biggest chunk of that bar is drought.
Mm-hmm. Early in the 20s, the Dust Bowl of the 20s, mm-hmm. and apparently it was bad in the 40s again.
Right. So, and this is worldwide.
This is worldwide
numbers. Yeah. And again, as technology and energy can help to control that, it's at 71 degrees you're talking about.
Exactly.
So that's the idea that energy can help us deal with that.
So we're getting better with dealing with natural disasters, and energy is what's helping us do it.
Okay.
The next point is, again, natural disaster deaths are an issue. There were about 10,000 people who died in 2017 from natural disasters. But at the same time, there were 1.7 million people died. Push the next button, if you will.
Thank you.
Or 1.4 million 1.6 million deaths due to lack of sanitation. Diarrhea. 1.6 million people died from diarrhea, from lack of clean water and clean sanitation. And it takes energy to provide clean water and to adequately deal with our sewers.
Right.
And another 4 million people died, 3.9, from respiratory diseases. Many of those in third world countries from cooking over cow dung, cooking over wood inside small huts. And so, everyone is concerned, the advocates, the green advocates talk about energy justice and talk about the fact that the poor of the world are going to suffer disproportionately because of climate change. And they're worried about what's going to happen to the poor of the world 50 years from now. They don't seem nearly as worried about what's happening to the poor right now. And the fact that the poor right now need energy. And the cheapest source and most available source of energy for them across most of the world is coal. And that's why Asia is still adding coal plants, you know, faster than we can close them here.
Right.
You know, China's putting in more coal plants. And so, you know, lack of energy is a bigger issue than too much carbon energy. I guess that's my point.
Gotcha. A lot of folks would say, but those additional coal plants is not going to help the respiratory ailments of folks, right?
They are sitting there breathing out of the coal stack. The coal is providing electrons that go to a stove, so they aren't, you know, certainly it puts it out in the air. But I mean, you can have the coal plants we shut down here had almost no emissions except for CO2. They had scrubbers on them that knocked everything out. Right. And there's very, very clean coal plants. I'm not saying that's what they're putting in China, because China's air is pretty foul. But you can use coal and have very clean air, but you still have lots of CO2 emissions. And so everyone considers CO2 a contaminant, but it's what we breathe out. It's what's, you know, the air's made of a lot of CO2, or not very much CO2 at all, but it's made of some CO2. Parts per billion, right? 400 parts per billion is where we are on CO2. So it's really a very, very small part of our air. But it is a global warming molecule, and trying to reduce and control our emissions, I think, is worth doing. So I'm not trying to argue against the direction we're headed. I'm just trying to put it in priority look at another way to get there.
Right. If we're talking about spending billions of dollars, I guess
Correct.
How we spend those billions is important.
Correct.
And that's kind of what you're advocating here and talking about. And the fact that, again, as I said at the beginning of the show, I think to replace our current energy usage one-to-one is astronomically expensive.
And takes a lot more wind and solar than what people think. People think that you can put in a gigawatt of solar and replace a gigawatt of coal. You can't do that. It doesn't replace a gigawatt of coal. Doesn't even come close.
Right.
So that's where the math comes in.
We'll talk about that.
Oil is cheap. Lots of $5,000 a gallon. If you had to push your car around, that's the manpower it would take. So we don't appreciate how cheap and how affordable energy is.
Right. And that's true. And it affects all of us, I think, from everything from the goods and services that we get shipped to us and transported across the country, or even those cargo ships across the oceans. That are running not on electricity necessarily, but on, some kind of petroleum fuels.
Yep.
That's what we're talking about. So
they
that's
are
the
that.
Idea. Okay. All right. Moving along.
Again,
to,
lots of stuff made from oil and gas, and we need it. You can blow through that.
Right. Okay. Just showing all the fun things.
Everything.
Is that your house?
No, but I mean, and you've made this point a number of times that energy is tied directly to our economy.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. is five times as wealthy and five times as productive, as the bulk of the planet, but it takes five times as much energy to run that economy. And that's because literally everything you have and everything you do takes energy. Even a cotton T-shirt that you don't think, that's not made from petroleum. It took diesel tractors to farm it. It took a natural gas factory to make the shirt. It took more trucks to bring that shirt to a store where you drove in your car to buy it. And the bottom line, there's nothing we have, nothing we do that energy doesn't impact, and the cost of energy doesn't impact.
Right. And I guess what we're seeing, too, is that while the United States uses a lot of energy, it has a very high standard of living. Again, to your point, I think there really aren't a lot of people that I know of that want to give up any of those standards of living to lower that footprint.
When people want to have equality in the world, they're not thinking of meeting in the middle. They're thinking of bringing everybody else up to our level.
Right.
And to bring everybody else up to our level will take a tremendous amount of energy.
Right. That we don't have.
Well, we don't have right now.
Yeah. Okay.
And we're not going to get there with wind and solar.
Okay. Very good. Here's your T-shirt analogy,
I think from diesel tractors to the natural gas factory to trucking it to the department store where you get it to buy it.
Okay. So very, very good. All right. This is a busy graphic, so I'm going to let you kind of take us through it. But what should we be noticing?
Let's just look at that middle part. So the top curve is the petroleum consumption in the U.S., and the bottom curve is petroleum production. And you can see through the 70s and 80s and into the 2000s that oil prices were low and we weren't drilling enough to replace our production. Production was going down, but our consumption continued to go up. And so the green advocates are trying to stop production of oil and gas. And my point is the production of oil and gas will go away when we quit needing oil and gas, just like Kodak film did. You didn't have to ban Kodak film. Kodak film went away all on its own. Oil and gas will go away all on its own just as soon as we could use it. But when you try to stop the production before they started to stop the consumption is when you're going to have an economic disaster.
The demand is still high.
The demand is still high.
And that's what that top bar, I guess, is showing.
Yep.
And even when production was lower in the 70s, and now, as you can see, too, in those bars, they've kind of met a little bit.
Right.
I mean, the United States really produces what we need.
Yep. We are now energy independent.
And that's amazing.
That's the shale revolution. You can see that climb in that curve since the shale revolution.
A lot of folks, I think, 30 years ago would be surprised to see that today.
Right. No doubt. Yeah, we're always going to be dependent on Saudi Arabia and OPEC for our oil. And so we're now in a much stronger energy position because we're independent. We control our destiny.
Right, right. But it's still traded on that global market, which is why prices fluctuate so much.
Correct. It is still a global commodity, but we don't have to worry about getting it from somewhere else.
Right. No one's going to shut off the
supply. Right. No one's going to shut off the supply.
Yeah. So, okay. Got it.
We'll still have our share.
Good to know. Very good. That 71 degrees is safe.
Okay. Another slide that shows the fact that banning production does not stop consumption. New York banned fracking in 2015, and you can see this is their natural gas consumption. It had zero effect on their natural gas consumption.
It's in New York State.
This is in the state of New York.
Yep.
And so
no one stopped using their natural gas in New York.
No.
They didn't turn the furnace off.
No, they still needed it.
Or cook.
Yeah.
And so what happened was the business went to their neighbors to the
south. Their neighbors to the south in Pennsylvania, yeah.
Right, and they made billions.
Yeah, and they still are. Pennsylvania is still one of the biggest natural gas producing states in the nation. The same geologic rock goes into your old hometown area, you know,
in the southern tier of New York.
Or
northern tier of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and but yet, instead of allowing the development of those minerals and allowing the landowners there to get the royalties and allowing the communities there to enjoy the economic benefit, they banned it so that all that money, jobs, and taxes goes to Pennsylvania. They import their natural gas. What they didn't import were their emissions. You know, the emissions go with consumption, not production. Stopping the production will not stop emissions. Stopping consumption stops the emissions, because that's where they live.
Gotcha. So there we are. All right.
So the biggest...
This looks like math.
The biggest issue comparing energy sources, they tend to be, at least electric energy sources, they tend to compare them on a energy capacity basis rather than energy over time. How many gigawatts are they capable instantaneously? And it's really providing those gigawatts over time that you see the real issue with wind and solar, because they aren't there all the time.
Right. Isn't blowing all the time. Sun's
not out
all the time.
At noon on a sunny day, solar's great.
Yeah.
And 1 gigawatt puts out 1 gigawatt. But that 1 gigawatt goes away at night, and you need to replace it. And so let's talk about that.
Okay. All right. Very good. And so how do we do that? I guess some people would say, well, yeah, batteries, right? Can't batteries help to maintain the supply even at those times when wind and solar aren't so great?
So the lithium ion batteries are still the best storage option. And I'll get to batteries here in a sec. Let me talk about this slide real quick.
Sure.
So this is 1 gigawatt of wind or solar, solar actually, you know, because it's right in the middle of the day. Wind kind of comes and goes through the day. But it meets, if you have 1 gigawatt of average demand in a city over a 24-hour period, you're meeting that energy demand in the middle of the day, and then you need backup generation at night. If you want to meet 100% of the demand, go ahead and go to the next slide.
Okay, all right.
If you need 100% of the demand, you have to have 4 gigawatts of wind and solar that and then you need to store 75% of that energy in those lithium ion batteries or some other storage mechanism.
So from that time when I guess the sun is right out there, you're making more energy. So
more energy than you need. So you save it for nighttime.
So you can use your 1 gig for the demand currently, but then have enough left over for the demand at night when you need it.
Right. And the, and I run through the numbers in the video. I don't think I have them in the slides, but there's just not enough lithium-ion batteries in the world, and they aren't being built fast enough. It would take 30,000 gigawatt hours of energy storage to run the U.S., and it would right now we have 30 gigawatt hours of energy storage, and it's being built at about 10 gigawatt hours per year. Not gigawatts, gigawatt hours. You know, it's again, you said we put in, you know, 100 gigawatt battery. Well, how long will that battery last? Well, it only lasts 3 or 4 hours. And so that battery does not provide you 100 gigawatts over a 24-hour period. You know,
right.
It provides you a little short burst.
Sure.
So it'd take 2,000 years at the current build-out rates to run the U.S. Again, lithium, and there's not enough lithium on the planet. So it's just not... it's just not a long-term solution.
Now, a lot of, I guess, proponents would say, but there's got to be new technology coming that might replace lithium ion batteries with something better, and that might redo these calculations.
Might, but do you make mandates on things that might be, you know, and they're mandating this. You know, it's not like there's a choice. You know, they're saying you will be net zero PNM with your electric distribution by 2045. And PNM doesn't have a choice, but yet they really don't have a way to get there either. And so as we start bumping up into the timeline on these mandates, the reality of what we're trying to do and the idiocy of what we're trying to do will come to light.
And that's your point.
In blackouts and brightouts. That's my point.
And that is your point. And so some of this has been talking about is hydrogen, right, so, as another potential option for the future.
Well, in hydrogen, Scott, is not an energy source. Let's go to that next slide real quick.
Okay.
Hydrogen is not found in pure form. It must be separated from other molecules. And it takes energy to separate it from those molecules. The two molecules that they're using right now are methane and water. Water is, if you use water electrolysis and you use wind or solar as your power source for that, then it's called green hydrogen. The water is a really, really strong molecule, and it takes 3.5 times as much energy to break that hydrogen off of that molecule, 3.5 times more energy to break it off than you get when you use that hydrogen back. So it's extremely inefficient storage mechanism for energy. Methane, on the other hand, you look at it cross-eyed, and those hydrogen molecules hop off, and it doesn't take much energy to break it off. You get about 1 to 1. You'll get an equal amount. But the bottom line is it takes energy to get that hydrogen, and then that hydrogen is really either a storage mechanism, or you can now use it in a car or in a ship or in a plane to where you'll have zero emissions at the point of the energy consumption. And so hydrogen's real application is going to be in those energy consumption, you know, you're going to have to create it using another form of energy, but then it'll be used in automobiles or transportation primarily to provide a carbon-free transportation.
Kind of long-range, I guess, transportation, right?
Long-range.
As opposed to maybe an electric vehicle in town, but something if you want to make a ship that goes across the ocean or train or semi-trucks. Hydrogen has been touted, I guess, as maybe that potential fuel of the future.
Right. And it's got a lot of miles to go before it gets there, but it has a lot of potential for that as well.
But we're hearing a lot about that at the federal level, and I think even at the state level, about maybe a future with hydrogen or trying to create this hydrogen hub and some other resources.
Yeah, unfortunately, we failed and did not get there.
This round. I know
there's still folks talking about it. We still have PESCO making hydrogen production units it's still an industry. It's still going to I think help our area and be viable in our area, but not without the federal money.
Right.
The giveaways
not as fast as it would have with that investment from the feds.
So again, if we go to the next slide, Green hydrogen, again, is produced from water with renewable sources. Blue hydrogen is produced from methane. And the chemical process of, so even if you use renewable energy to get hydrogen from methane, you're going to have CO2 as a chemical byproduct. And so CO2 with carbon capture is blue hydrogen. And so everything we're going to talk about is carbon neutral energy sources. Natural gas with carbon capture, blue hydrogens with carbon capture. We do need to capture the carbon.
Can't let it go into the atmosphere.
We need to reduce it anyway.
Okay.
We need to minimize that.
We've got about maybe 5 minutes remaining this morning,
all right,
George Sharp.
Keep that in mind.
Keep moving.
Yeah, keep moving.
Okay.
Yeah, this just gets back to, let me just run through these nitrogens. Again, green hydrogen just doesn't make sense. The only way it makes sense is if the government's paying it out in free money, which they are. You can go to the next one. So the other thing about hydrogen is because you only get a third of it, 4 gigawatts of wind and solar, it no longer, if you turn that into hydrogen, hydrogen is your storage mechanism, it doesn't get it because you only get 30% of that energy back. You would need 11 gigawatts of solar. Go to the next slide. 11 gigawatts of solar to meet 1 gigawatt of average demand over time using green hydrogen as your energy storage source. So again, it's just a ludicrous approach to doing it.
Okay.
And hydrogen will be in long-term shipping. You can blow through
as
those.
We talked about that, sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Long-term transportation. Here's the other issue with the all-electric world and being being carbon-free by 2050 is that only 40% of the U.S. energy consumption is electricity. And so we need to convert everything else to electricity, you know, from transportation to manufacturing to heat in your home. And that is going to take a lot. It's going to take a lot of power plants. That's next two slides and a lot of new and not a lot of new transmission lines.
Gotcha.
We got to more than double the number of utility scale power generation. And go again, we've got to more than double the thousands and thousands of miles of transmission lines that crisscross our nation.
And those don't happen quickly.
There's 4,000 miles. There's 7 major projects for transmission lines totaling 4,000 miles, including the, I think they call it the
Sunzia.
There we go. Sunzia, New Mexico.
Yeah. I've been talking about that for years.
Yeah, talking about it for years. And so, again, it's just not going to happen by 2050. So not only is the direction we're going ridiculous, the time frame is ridiculous. We're not getting there by 2050. There's no way the world gets there by 2050.
Okay. We get there eventually, but not by the deadline that they've set.
And the reality is all these impacts from wind, solar, and one of the things that we didn't show here but is in the video is all the mining and all the impact that goes with wind and solar that's behind it, because it takes a lot of concrete, a lot of fiberglass, a lot of stuff, and we don't see that impact here because that mining's happening in China and South America and some pretty nasty countries.
Right.
So the other issue is energy independence. Again, we are the U.S. is independent right now, but we would be totally dependent on the rest of the world if we go to an all-renewable world. With almost all of our lithium, most of our turbine blades, most of our solar panels, do we really want to be, you know, the most important thing of our lives is energy, because it's everything in our life. And do we really want to be dependent on China and South America for our energy supplies? I don't think so.
Right. Got it. And again, I guess the idea would be, too, is maybe the government could help generate some benefit to doing this production in this country.
You know, those green protesters, you try to put in a mine here in this country, and those green protesters are going to show up. They don't care about climate change then. They care about the fact that you're going to do something. So, I mean, I just don't see it happening. I don't see the mining increasing. There'll be some increase in mining, but we will not be self-sufficient.
But things like solar panel manufacturing, that could certainly be moved to this country.
There's a lot of rare earth minerals that's in the solar.
Which still have to come from outside.
They'll still have to come from outside.
Okay.
Yeah, lots of rare earth minerals.
I got you. Okay.
So the bottom line is there is one governmental agency that has a calculator, and that's called the Energy Information Administration. And they make projections into the future not based on wishes, but based on what they see actually happening. And you can see from this graph, there is going to be an increase in renewables, but there is no way it's taken over oil and natural gas. And they show no increase in nuclear. And that's what we really need, is nuclear power. But on our current trajectory, there is no nuclear.
Right.
We are not getting there down our current path. The EIA knows it. No one else in the government seems to think that's the truth.
Right. And the top two lines on this graph is petroleum and natural gas. And the other ones are towards the bottom.
Yep.
But you're right. I guess nuclear would have a role to play.
In meeting this demand. It should be the major. Yeah, it should be.
But folks are issues with nuclear for sure.
So I talk about those issues in the video.
Right.
I hope you'll take the time to watch the Math Net Zero. It's on my YouTube channel.
Yes.
Just
wrapping it up.
Yeah, just running through these. We won't read through all that. The bottom line is, we need nuclear. We need natural gas and carbon capture. Those are proven energy sources that we know will work, that we know we can rely on 100% of the time. And that's the direction we need to be going.
Gotcha.
The direction we're going right now will end up at a dead end.
But you're not saying stop research on solar or other types of energy?
Not necessarily, no.
If
you can find ways to do them better, if you can find ways to do them without the impact. The problem is you're not going to change the physics of it. It still takes a huge amount of land to capture that energy.
True.
And the sun and the wind are renewable, but all the stuff it takes to capture it aren't renewable. All the mining, all the equipment, all the concrete, you got to do it again and again and again every 20 years. And I don't think the planet can sustain it.
Interesting. Got it. Yeah. Okay. Again, you've got a YouTube channel. That's where folks can find more about this.
Yes.
You've made a video also, which kind of takes us through this as well.
Yes.
That's where folks can find that on the George Sharp YouTube channel.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Very good.
George, Scott,
I appreciate it.
Thanks for caring.
Thank you for coming in.
All right.
Appreciate it very much. And thanks for your brain for putting all this together for us.
I can't stop my brain from.
No.
It goes all night long.
I'm grateful.
It keeps me awake all the time.
Well, okay. There
all
you
right.
go. Thanks for sharing
right.
it with us,
thanks.
George. George Sharp, my guest this morning right here on KSJE.
All right.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.